Hello and welcome to this episode of the Getting to Grips MMA and BJJ podcast. On this episode, my friend Lewis Lazenby joins me to recap the UFC 159 fight night card in Mexico City. And we talk about other stuff too. There's a little bit of an audio issue in this one because it's the first one that I've tried to do with another host in another country. So he is pretty loud with his big booming northern voice, and I'm a little bit quiet, so the sound levels are a bit off and maybe a little bit echoey on his end, which we'll figure out for the next time. So just be pre-warned about that. Other than that, enjoy the show. All right, so welcome to this episode of Getting to Grips. Shan is still away, so I've roped in somebody else to co-host with me for this kind of after the bell show for UFC Fight Night 159 from Mexico City. Lewis, introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Lewis. I was a former student of James before he moved away, and I'm here to make sure he's not lonely during this podcast.
I really appreciate that, because that last fucking podcast I did when I was by myself was excruciating. It was so painful.
I didn't listen to it. I haven't got around to listening to that one yet. But I've literally just finished training now. I'm still sat in Pura Vida. I'm on the mats right now, just alone. I've got a vodka Red Bull in my hands, drinking. Chaviest drink ever.
Yeah. Stuff. Man, I miss those mats. I miss you guys. I miss training, man.
Yeah, they're not quite as clean as when you were around, but they're still pretty clean.
See, I leave and everything goes to shit on you. So, man, it was a really good night of fights.
It was very eventful. A lot of different things happened.
Fucking hell. I mean, let's just get started straight away with the obvious. That main event, super disappointing, man. Like, I've been looking forward to that fight for a long time. Those guys both put a lot of training in for that fight. And when it started and they both came out, and there was just a quick exchange, and there was so much speed and power on both ends, and I was like, yes, I'm so fucking ready for this. And
then, man, yeah, Rodriguez looked amazing. He looks so fast with his kicks. He looks so good. Yeah, I'm so gutted about the eye poke. Even Jeremy has been bragging about him sharing training camps with Tony Ferguson. So he said that his cardio was just perfect for this fight. It's so disappointing.
I know, man. Like, I've been following all the interviews on the run up to it and just listening about Jeremy Stephens. Apparently, like, he sunk $30,000 into this training camp too, which, like, for somebody who's not a UFC champion, is a hell of a lot to spend on an MMA training camp. He went out to Mexico early to acclimatize himself to the altitude and everything. Like, this was such a good fight of, like, flashy, dynamic young striker against, like, a super powerful but really solidly fundamental guy. It was going to be great. And then just, I mean, to be fair, like, it didn't look that bad on the replay, but Herb Dean was right. Like, his eye was spasming. He couldn't fucking open it.
Yeah, you could tell how red and sore it looked. Like, it looked inflamed. It looked horrible. I think it scratched down the pupil or something. Because Rodriguez's hand just went down. I think he, like, scratched it, maybe. Yeah, but I don't know.
Like, it didn't really look like a poke. It looked like he kind of, yeah, like, raked it downwards. And maybe his nail was a little bit long. But, like, when they did show Jeremy Stephens' right eye and him trying to open it, it literally was spasming. Like, it looked pretty bad. And Jeremy Stephens is one of the toughest people on the face of the planet. Like, if he could have possibly carried on fighting, he would have carried on fucking fighting, for sure.
Definitely. That's why I was so angry at the Mexican crowd, man, for booing him and throwing things.
Like,
such dickheads, man. I couldn't believe it. Jeremy Stephens is, like, the toughest guy ever. Man, I heard in an interview afterwards, it was an interview with his coach, and his coach said that, Jeremy said that when it hit his high, he felt like a tremendous amount of pressure, like so much pressure he's never felt before, just building in his eye. So I have no idea what happened, but it felt like he couldn't open it because the eye had, like, pop out because of the pressure or something. It was weird.
That's the thing with eye pokes, man. Like, it's such a weird thing. You never quite know, like, what's bad. Sometimes they don't look that bad, and they're awful. And it's just, like, there's been quite a bit of controversy with eye pokes recently, because there was Czech Congo and Bellator.
you know, that a lot of people thought that he was just looking for a way out because he's getting the shit beaten out of him by Ryan Bader. And then again, more recently, like I spoke at length on one of our last shows about Todd Duffy and how it really, to be honest, like it didn't look anywhere near as bad as Jeremy Stephens. His eye was not closed up, but he was knackered and he was starting to lose that fight. And I really do think that he was looking for a bit of a way out. But Jeremy Stephens is not somebody whose heart or willingness to continue I'm ever going to question. So
exactly. Not when he spent $30,000 on a camp. He's not going to give up in the first 10 seconds of a fight.
No, exactly. Never. So, I mean, I just think they've got to run that straight back. Like, there's no other match to be made post that except to run it straight back. And I'm looking on the Sherdog front page right now. And Jair Rodriguez has been talking some shit after it was all respectful after the fight. He was saying, oh, well, I've fought with eye pokes before. I told the doctor I could see. I don't think that's cool, man. Like, I really do think this was different. Like, Jeremy Stephens
definitely
could not open his eye. Like, there was something else going on there. And there have been no doctor's reports back yet, but hopefully it's all right.
Yeah, I can't wait for a doctor's report. Yeah, Rodriguez, he looked angry afterwards. He looked angry, and he was raising his arms afterwards as if he'd won the fight, which was weird. Like, he in the moment, he definitely believed that Jeremy Stephens was faking it.
Yeah, which is weird to me. Like, he should know better than that. Like, this is Jeremy Stephens we're talking about. There's, you know, I feel like I'm just repeating myself over and over again about how tough he is, but it's true. And it was, like, weird to see Rodriguez getting all fired up after the fight and getting angry. I didn't know whether he was angry at, like, the circumstances. I didn't know whether he was angry at Rodriguez, or I didn't know whether one of those fucking pieces of detritus that the crowd was throwing had hit him in the face and he was just...
No, he got up on top of the cage, didn't he? And he was raising his arms to the crowd. So I don't think he was angry at the crowd. I'm pretty sure it was directed towards Jeremy. It was directed towards Michael Bisping when he got in and touched Rodriguez on the shoulder. Did you see that?
Yeah. There was a lot of fucking weird energy in that cage at the end of that fight. And then you've got Brandon Fitzgerald in the commentary box, like, saying how he's crawling underneath the table because people are throwing glass bottles.
Yeah. They were throwing glass bottles. I saw plastic ones.
How they got, like, glass bottles inside the arena, like, I have no idea. But that's not a good look for the Mexican crowd. We haven't seen anything like that in MMA since, like, the early days of MMA in Brazil with Jungle Fight and stuff.
Yeah. I love how they were still sponsoring Modelo throughout it as well. They were like, they're throwing Modelo.
Yeah, they may be throwing bottles into the arena, and this is disgraceful, but I just want to draw everybody's attention to the fact that Modelo, fucking King of Beers, or whatever that tagline is being thrown.
Yeah. Modelo, the fastest drink to be thrown or something. Man, it's crazy. The hardest dissing drink.
There could be so many.
I've
got some quotes from Rodriguez up here.
Basically,
essentially, he's talking a bunch of shit about Jeremy Stephens. After that, he says, "But you've always got to give the benefit of the doubt to your opponent."
Oh, fuck's sake, man.
So direct quotes, he said, "I don't know how to feel right now, honestly. All of my friends are telling me not to be disappointed that this shit happens. I really did all of this for my camp. I put in a lot of effort, a lot of time." And where's the bit about... He said, "I fought before with an eye injury. I told the doctor that I could see and I carried on. I'm not saying he was faking it, but he could have been looking for a way out." And then says, "But you've always got to give the benefit of the doubt to your opponent."
Man.
So, yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna be too harsh on the guy. He's obviously super disappointed. That was a really disappointing outcome. He put a lot of work into it, so he's gonna.
Yeah, it's horrible for both fighters. Horrible. But imagine if
got to run that back.
Yeah, definitely as soon as possible. But imagine if it wasn't even that bad of an eye poke. If it was like 60% of that. Imagine carrying on the rest of that fight, five rounds. Was it a five-round fight? No, it was a three-round fight, right?
It was going to be a five-round fight.
Or was it a five-round fight? Imagine carrying on those five rounds with a fucking hurt eye. Like, you can't see through it. It would have been torture. It would have been horrible.
Man, he just would have been catching, like, left hook and left high kick and knocked out, essentially, because he wasn't seeing it. He would have had no peripheral vision in that eye. Like, it's just, when the eye closes up, I know you're like 10 years old, but have you seen the, the Rocky movies?
I don't like the Rocky movies. I've seen the first one. I hate all fighting movies.
Oh, yeah, I forget. You fucking heathen. What kind of person doesn't like Rocky?
It's the choreography. It's just not real. And every time I watch a fighting movie, I'm just like, what the fuck is this? And it just puts me straight out.
They were made in the 70s, man.
I know, man, but there's still no... There's still no excuse. It just takes me out of it.
There's a scene, like, in Rocky 2 where he's coming back to fight Apollo for the second time. And Mickey, his coach, knows that he's got a fucked up left eye. And Mickey's, like, 80 years old at this point. And he's like, how's your eye? And Rocky's like, it's good, it's good, it's good. And then Mickey just fucking slaps him with his right hand. And he's like, you didn't see that coming, did you? and he's like, so that's exactly what it would have been like for Jeremy Stevens, except it wouldn't have been an 80-year-old man hitting him. It would have been a 26-year-old Yair Rodriguez putting his shin upside his head. So it's a good thing he didn't just try and tough through it.
Yeah, his kicks are fast as well. Like, he couldn't have done that.
I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed. It would have been
so am I. Yeah, I read some comments on YouTube when I was looking back at the fight. There were some comments. You know, Tony Ferguson, the type of guy comments. You know, that like thing that's gone viral that everybody's doing.
What's
that? So people post comments like, Tony Ferguson is the type of guy, and then they'll post a ridiculous thing afterwards. Not because he's a crazy fucking... He's so crazy, Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, is it not case?
I can't believe you've never seen this. You've never been on YouTube on an MMA thing before. Just the comment sections are full of it.
Life is way too short for me to be reading YouTube comments. YouTube comments are like the fucking cesspool, the dumping pool of people's minds onto the internet. It's worse than Instagram or Facebook. I just can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, this won't make much sense to you then, because fucking you don't know that thing. But they basically just do comments about Tony Ferguson's crazy training schedule. No, because he's like kicking metal bars and things.
Yeah.
Just crazy shit like that. And one of them was like, Tony Ferguson's the type of guy to make Jeremy Stevens wear onions around his eyes for the next training camp. Like,
I like that. I like that. I think that's good. Yeah, Tony Ferguson is fucking like wacky shit. Seems to work though.
Yeah.
The only memes that I see are the ones that appear on Instagram. Did you see the latest ones about John Danaher?
No, I've not.
You know how they there's all those ones about Chuck Norris? Like, Chuck Norris dove into a pool and all the water got out of his way and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or when Chuck Norris does push-ups, he pushes the world down. All that kind of
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So there was a few about John Danaher recently. And the one I liked was John Danaher bought a rescue center for old dogs and taught them all new tricks. There's a bunch of shit like that. Anyway, I digress. There's a lot to talk about for a fight that ended in about 7 seconds in a no contest, mostly because of the antics of the fucking crowd.
But,
with all that being said, let's move on to Carlos.
Oh, one second. I just want to mention one thing. How good was Dean Herb's refereeing? He was awesome.
I love Dean Herb. He's my favorite referee.
He was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good, actually. Yeah, that's one of the things that I wrote down as I was watching the fight. Like, fucking full credit to Herb Dean, and Bisping was mentioning this on the broadcast too. Like,
I'm a little bit drunk. I said Dean Herb, didn't I?
Yes, yes, you did. did you not catch me taking the piss out of you for that?
No. I'm a little bit drunk right now. I've got vodka Red Bull in my hands.
Fair enough. Yeah, Bisping was really harping on about that, and yeah, good for Herb Dean, man, because I think he appreciated, like, A, how fucking angry the crowd was going to be if that fight didn't continue.
Yeah, yeah.
B, like, how much time and effort and money both of those guys had put into training for it, and so he did everything he could. I mean, he did everything he possibly could to try and make that fight happen, and good for him. You know, there's a reason why, in general, he's the best in the business. He doesn't always... you know, make the right calls, but it's a tough job, and that was a really good example of why he's one of the best.
Yeah. Okay, so on to Carlos
Esparza and Alexa Grasso. Man, what a fucking fight. What a fight.
it was round three was crazy, man.
Your thoughts on it initially.
Man, how can you mention this fight and not mention the armbar? The armbar looked brutal. I was like, oh, man. I was clenched up while that was going on. I thought it was going to break. It was horrible.
I mean, I think there's going to be some definite damage on that arm. She's going to wake up with that elbow swollen to shit tomorrow morning. That was incredible. And it just goes to show, like, credit to Carla Esparza to tough that out. So, I mean, this fight, let's just quickly go over it. So, like, I thought, like, previously to this fight that it was pretty simple. Like, if Carla Esparza was able to, like, implement her takedown game and get it to the ground against Grasso, then she was going to be able to dominate and win this fight. And I thought if Grasso kept on the feet, like, her boxing is so much better. She's so much longer and quicker with the striking that she was going to be able to dominate it. But, like, having seen Alexa Grasso have such an issue with Tatiana Suarez, and I know that Suarez is like more of an athlete than Carla Esparza, but having seen the problem she had with the wrestling, I thought that Esparza was really in with a shot here. But for me, like what really surprised me was how effective Alexa Grasso was able to be, like off her back on the ground against Carla Esparza. What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the later rounds, definitely. I was really impressed with Carla Esparza's wrestling. I thought she looked amazing.
Well, yeah, she was good. So, I mean, did you agree with the decision? You know, Carla Esparza took it by.
I do, because I did have the first two rounds for Carla.
So I should say I didn't agree with the decision. I thought that Alexa Grasso did enough
in round three.
Definitely in round three, but also like Carla Esparza was able to get the takedown some of the time. But I also thought that like in a lot of the standing grappling exchanges, she was out muscled. And when she did get the takedown, like for example, in the first round, she hit that head and arm throw kind of towards the end of the round and almost got her back taken. When she did take Alexa Grasso down, she never ever passed her guard. And Alexa Grasso was able to maintain like a pretty offensive guard the whole time. She was constantly like throwing up submissions, throwing up sweep attempts, really good guard retention again, so she never got passed. And she did a good job of kind of using the overhooks and always threatening with like hip bumps and kimuras, which really nullified what Esparza was able to do on top. So even though Esparza got the takedowns, like I think the more effective offense came from the bottom, from Alexa Grasso.
Yeah, definitely. And she got that armbar in at the end of round two, right? That looked pretty.
No, it was like the beginning of round three, I think.
No. It was at the bell. Literally, she got an armbar in at the end of round two, and then the bell went.
Okay, right. Yeah,
it's a bit like your fight with the triangle when you got that triangle. But yeah, I think it was at the end of round two. She got an armbar in.
At the end of round two, also, Esparza had been working so hard for those takedowns that it was at the end of round two that you really started to see Grasso like hurt Esparza on the feet with the boxing too. And I think she hit like a clean 1-2 on Esparza towards the end of the second round, which wobbled her.
At the start of round three too, she wobbled her, and then she just didn't go after it. She let Esparza breathe.
That was the weird thing. She was really hurting Esparza on the feet, and she chose to follow Esparza to the floor, which was the sequence that led to that crazy armbar. But I just thought, like, tactically, that was a bit of a weird decision because she was piecing Esparza up on the feet with her boxing. And Esparza was starting to lose her gas tank a little bit. And so I don't think she was going to be able to take Grasso down again at that point. Grasso was starting to kind of shrug off those takedowns and find the underhooks and sprawl. So I think if Grasso had just kept that fight on the feet and not followed Esparza down to where she's more comfortable in that grappling department, she probably could have finished the fight in the third round.
Yeah, definitely.
And she wouldn't have let it go to the judges for what I think was a pretty dodgy decision.
Yeah, it was a hard fight to judge. I wouldn't have minded who won it, to be honest. Alexa Grasso was... corner was shouting to pounce on her when Esparza was rocked, and it was but I think it's tough, you know, if you see a rocked opponent in front of you, you don't know if they're she didn't look that wobbly, Esparza, but you could tell she was a bit rocked. But I don't know whether that was just from fatigue or whether she was actually hurt. It's quite difficult to jump on somebody when you're also tired because you don't want to gas yourself out.
Yeah, it's true, you know, and that is the thing. But I, you know, it depends because she's got a boxing background. She's been striking for a lot longer than she's been grappling. And I would have thought it would have been more comfortable for her conditioning wise to stay on the feet. And Esparza is, you know, she can strike a bit, but she's quite short and stocky, and her forte lies in the grappling, and she can kind of grapple all day. Like find places to rest, and just she's got that kind of grappler's grinding cardio going on. But I think she was done on the feet. You know, I mean, we'll never know, but I think that Alexa Grasso could really have saved herself a lot of grief if she'd have just gone after her.
Yeah.
Now we've got Carla Esparza, after being on a two-fight slide against Claudia Gadelha and Tatiana Suarez, she's now got two wins in a row. I mean, this last one's going to be controversial. People are going to talk about it, but she's got two unanimous decisions now. And she just kind of keeps coming back. I mean, I kind of, after I saw Carla Esparza get their shit beaten out of her by Ioana Jędrzejczyk back in 2015, like, it was such a bad beating that I questioned how much she had left in the tank. And she has been a bit up and down since then, but, you know, she showed today that she still kind of belongs in the upper echelons of that division. She's tough as shit. The fact that she got it through that armbar really says a lot about her. But I just don't know who she's going to fight next.
I was trying to watch her arm, how she used her arm after that armbar attempt to see if it was actually hurting her. But at the final, like, 10 or 15 seconds of round three, she was up for trading, just punches towards the end of the fight. Like, not much technique, just going both in and, you know, just trading punches. A bit like Max Holloway at the end of fights. She just opened, just going and trade. It was good.
That last flurry at the end of the fucking third round, like, Grasso almost had her out there as well, I think. She hit her with a couple of massive punches.
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely, Esparza definitely took the short stick, like, with those trades.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a fun fight. Like, really, really good look for the women's division. In fact, the women's division in general tonight, like, both of the fights on that main card were really good.
Yeah.
Just going back to the decision again for a second. Like, do you see Joe Martinez, like, kind of, he looked like he got the scorecards from the judges, started walking back into the cage to announce the decision, looked at the scorecards, and then went back to the judges to double check the given
cards. Yeah, I saw that.
Like, you saw the fight the same way that I did for Grasso. So it was kind of weird to see that happen. And the crowd, obviously, really, really not happy about that decision.
Yeah. It kind of, my internet's pretty bad, and it kind of buffered around that area. But I thought the judge was taking too long with it. That's just what I presumed, because it was buffering around that area. But yeah, I didn't know that the referee went back to double check.
Yeah, the ring announcer, Joe Martinez. But I'm pretty sure that's what ended up happening. I'll have to go back and watch it. But yeah, just kind of good.
At the results, when they announced the results, because of the boos of the crowd, the translator couldn't hear what Carla Esparza was saying because of the boos of the crowd. And he literally just couldn't translate what she was saying. And he was just like, he just summarized it really quickly and then he just shrugged his shoulders.
I couldn't tell whether it was because he couldn't hear because of the boos of the crowd, but he also looked super pissed off about the decision. Because he was Mexican, I think he was like, fuck it, I thought Grasso won that fight, I'm not going to give you any more time in the spotlight than I think you deserve. And he just cut Carla Esparza short at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, good fight. I don't know, like, what this does for the division. Like, I think the UFC made this fight expecting Grasso to win. Because they're like, Grasso's number 9 and Carla Esparza is number 8. So this really doesn't move anything in the division at all. It stays where it is. But it was a controversial decision, so maybe they can have a rematch. Like, the big fight coming up in that division now is Michelle Waterson and Ioana Jędrzejczyk, which is coming up soon. And that's going to really kind of shuffle some stuff around. But I wouldn't mind seeing them run back this fight. You know, it was a great fight, really entertaining, and a controversial decision. So maybe we'll get to see it again.
Yeah, hopefully.
Should we move on?
Yeah, to Brandon Moreno.
Yeah, another fucking great fight here. Tell me what you thought. Give me your overview.
Man, I loved watching the wrestling and BJJ. Just, you know, obviously Askarov was using his wrestling, and then Brandon Moreno towards the end of the fight was using his BJJ more, and it was a real pleasure to watch. I loved it.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, just what a crazy pace of a fight for a place that's like, in fact, one thing that kind of really drew my attention over the course of the whole fight card was how well conditioned everybody on the card was. I think that the UFC kind of learned their lesson after taking some heavyweights, you know, to altitude before and having some disappointed fights, that they were all lighter weight fighters on this card, which is good because you want to put Mexican fighters on there and they tend to be like in the smaller weight divisions anyway, with the exception of Cain Velasquez. And everybody was just in supreme fucking condition, man. Nobody gassed out like any more than you would expect. And this fight was a really good example of that. First of all, Brandon Moreno, change your fucking nickname. The Assassin Baby is a terrible, terrible nickname. At least syntactically, make it the Baby Assassin, not the Assassin Baby. Come on.
Yeah. Gotta switch things up.
Yeah, I guess so. I was kind of worried for Moreno early on in the fight because Askarov kind of got in there Khabib style on those body lock takedowns up against the cage. And I've spoken a lot recently about how guys are so used to wall walking now and like putting their back against the cage and getting up from there. But guys like Khabib have kind of written out this blueprint of how to take advantage of people trying to wall walk against that cage. And they will get your back, or they will go back to the body lock. And Brandon Moreno was really exposing his back a lot as he was trying to get up in that first round. And Askarov was getting on his back and threatening. And it was just the kind of, you know, squirreliness of Brandon Moreno that was saving him a bit there.
Yeah, yeah. Especially, we didn't see much, you know, it's kind of one-sided, the grappling in the early part of the fight. With Askar obviously winning it. But I really enjoyed when Brandon Moreno just, you know, like used the BJJ more towards the end. But what do you think about the decision?
It was a draw, right? A split draw?
Yeah, a split draw.
I think, like, overall, I think Brandon Moreno probably won that fight for my money. But I thought. I don't have as much of a problem with this decision as I had about the Alexa Grasso Carla Esparza decision, for example. Mm. Like I think it was pretty close, but like guns in my head, I think I would probably give it to Brandon Moreno because I definitely give the first round to Askarov. But again, like to be fair, at the end of that round, Moreno did hurt Askarov with a big left hook as well and kind of wobbled him. So I guess you could argue it that way.
Yeah, when they were breaking from the clinch, right?
Yeah, exactly. And one thing we saw, which kind of came back to play later on in the fight as well, is Askarov, even though he's a wrestler, like he had a really impressive, like offensive guard on the ground. Like he was throwing a lot of elbows. He was like switching from like full guard to butterfly, creating space, threatening with triangles, threatening with sweeps, and then using that space to kind of get up a little bit. And then at the beginning of the second round, Moreno comes out like super aggressive with that like really fucking powerful boxing, but he kind of lunges forward a bit and exposes himself for the takedown again. And that second round then was largely controlled by the grappling of Askarov. But Moreno's conditioning kind of allowed him to keep getting up. I give that round overall to Askarov because he really did hit a lot of takedowns and control on the floor.
The second round,
like big head kick at the end of the round for Brandon Moreno.
Yeah. And then he finished in that like reverse triangle position on top, right? But he didn't quite lock his legs up.
No, I mean, it was Askarov was safe in that position. Like he was kind of just
waiting out the clock.
A little bit gassed. And I think he knew he kind of had that round in the bag with his grappling beforehand. So he was just waiting to the end. I think Moreno, you know, it would have behooved him to just kind of separate, get up and try and finish that round on the feet because maybe Askarov was still hurt from that kick.
So what do you think Askarov won round one and two then?
Yeah, I think he definitely won round two. But I think round one, you could possibly give to Brandon Moreno. I need to go back and watch that fight. And this is why, like now that I'm talking to you about it, I'm almost kind of changing my mind midway. And that's why I think the split draw is actually a pretty good decision because
it
just depends on how you look at the fight, really.
Exactly. I need to watch this fight and the Collar Esparza fight again. Definitely. I only watched them once this morning and that was it.
Yeah. I'll be going back and watching all these fights. It's a fight card that's kind of worth rewatching anyway.
Yeah.
And I haven't even watched the prelims yet. The prelims sound like they were great too, and that sounds like it's worth a whole like recap show by itself too. So I'm looking forward to going back and watching those.
Yeah.
So Brandon Moreno, I mean, this is a split draw again. So whether it like forces this division forward at all. Like, I don't think Askarov was ranked coming into this fight. Brandon Moreno ranked at number 9. So I don't really know like what happens here. Again, like saying again on this card, this could be a fight that they run back.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will, but
no, I don't think so.
I'd pay to watch that again.
Yeah, I would, but I just don't think they will run it back again. Like, there's plenty more people they can fight.
That's true. And the thing is, like, in this flyweight division, Henry Cejudo needs to decide what he's going to do, whether he's going to defend that belt or anything else, because otherwise,
or fight Valentina Shevchenko. Have you heard about that?
I'm sure that's going to happen. Fucking, I just like even. There's something just so unbelievably irritating to me about Henry Cejudo. Like, his whole cringe thing and everything else. And ordinarily, when somebody, like, embraces that and kind of, like, I find it quite funny. But with him, it just annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, man, he's so cringe.
I find him really impressive, don't get me wrong. I think he's one of the best, like, ever to do it. And the fact that he's a gold medalist and stuff, I just wish he'd shut the fuck up about it.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on again, unless you got anything else to say about that particular
fight. No, that's all.
So we've got Irini Aldana coming in against, what was Mello's first name? I've got my notes.
Vanessa
Mello. Man, it was her UFC debut, wasn't it? What a fucking tough fight for your UFC debut, man.
Man, the thing is, there's 4 inches, like Irene's 5'9", Vanessa's 5'5". That much of a height difference is so, you know what I mean? Like, being the shorter fighter is so hard to come in. And, you know, you've got to work past their jab, their straight punches. And Irene was using her straight punches, her jab crosses really well and just keeping distance the whole time. Being the shorter fighter when somebody who's taller than you knows what they're doing is horrible. Because you've literally just got to work. You've got to work past their jab crosses, whatever. It's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like fucking 4 inches taller than you. You never had any trouble with me. there might be a slight experience difference in the striking there, but it was a really, really tough fight for Vanessa Mello. I mean, to come into the UFC and fight somebody the caliber of Irini Aldana, like, Irini Aldana is ranked number 10, but I would put her ahead of a lot of the guys who are ranked ahead of her. Like, for example, I think if she were to fight Raquel Pennington now, like, Raquel Pennington would be in trouble. I would favor her against Aspen Ladd, for example. I would love to see her fight, like, Juliana Pena. I'm not entirely convinced by Irini Aldana's grappling, but on the feet, like, I just think she uses her length so well. Her boxing is really, really crisp, and she's going to give a lot of people a lot of problems. And when we're looking at a division that has, like, Amanda Nunes up there, there are, like, a few people building up behind Amanda Nunes as possible challenges now, and that's good, because otherwise we were just going to see an endless loop of, like, Nunes and Holly Holm fighting each other. But now, like, the fights that people are going to want to see, even though Irini Aldana is ranked number 10, and I don't think the rankings have been updated yet, but I want to see Nunes fight Ketlin Vieira, Jermaine Durandamay, and now Irini Aldana is on that list for sure.
Yeah, do you know how tall oh, shit. Amanda Nunes is? How tall she is?
No, but I can find out. I'm on the rankings page right now, so let's
see. Yeah, find out. But I also liked how Irene used her leg kicks really well. Whenever Vanessa was trying to make up space to get on the inside, she'd just snap at the legs. Really strong leg kicks, too. Really impressed me.
Yeah, man. I was looking forward to seeing some big leg kicks for Jeremy Stevens on Yoel Rodriguez. That's never going to happen. Amanda Nunes is 5'8", 172.7.
5'8". Man, yeah.
How tall did you say Irini Aldana was?
5'9". And she was, right. Vanessa was 5'5", so that's 4 inches difference. One inch is like nothing, man. And your boxing can look really good against somebody shorter than you, especially when the fight lasts longer. If you're punching at like throat height, your throat height, you're not using that much energy. If you're punching against somebody taller than you or at the same height, your muscles just expend so much more energy, so much more. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot tougher fight for Amanda Nunes, obviously. I don't think Amanda Nunes is getting beat anytime soon.
No, I mean, I don't see Amanda Nunes realistically losing to any of those guys, but at least they're relatively intriguing matchups. Like, Nunes is going to be fighting Jermaine Duranamy at 245. I'm also interested to see her fight Ketlen Vieira, and there's just, yeah, at least now there are some interesting fights. Like, before there was nothing. You know, once she beat Rousey, once she beat Holm, once she went up and beat Cyborg, like, who the fuck is she going to fight next? And,
man, that was such an awesome fight.
Yeah. When she did, I wasn't sold on her. And then when she did that, she was like, well, I was like, well, I can't not be a fan now. Otherwise,
yeah, she became one of my favorite fighters like after that. It's one of the few fights where I've jumped up out of my seat when I've watched it.
Yeah, I mean, the women's divisions, they're not that deep, you know. There's so many factors going into why that is. I'm not going to get into them again. I've talked about it a lot before. But as far as, like, the top echelon of the women's divisions, I'm just looking through Amanda Nunes's record now. Her last few wins, man, Holly Holm, Cyborg, Raquel Pennington, Valentina Shevchenko, Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, Valentina Shevchenko again, Sarah McMahon, Olympic silver medalist, Shayna Baszler, Kat Zingano, Jermaine Durandamy. Man, she has beat, like, all of the best women in the world. Like, yeah. She's beaten the best people that they could have possibly thrown at her in two different weight divisions.
Definitely.
Man, that's so impressive.
Like, what guy can you name who's beat so many, you know, just awesome names? No, I mean, like, they're the best names in women fighting.
Yeah, for sure. It's as far as, like, she's the best ever in the women's divisions. There's no one that even comes close now. You know, Cyborg was incredibly dominant for a long time, but she was fighting cans for the majority of her career.
Yeah.
I think it's a real shame, like, everything that happened with Cyborg, the fact she's at Bellator now, because I still would have liked to have seen a rematch with Nunes.
Yeah, so would I.
Caught her early, and she caught her being sloppy, but I still think there's the potential to be a really good back and forth fight there. But you know, I guess she had enough of people taking the piss out of her, so she decided to jump ship and go to Bellator.
Yeah, and what her social media managers did when they were they cut that video to make it seem like Dana White was.
So
admitting to something weird.
She had, like, legitimate grievances with the way she was being treated. And
yeah, definitely.
I was quite vocal about the commentary with John Hannick and Joe Rogan when she fought, what was the last woman she fought called? The Canadian woman who lives in Florida. Fuck, let me have a look. I thought that commentary was really biased because she was kicking the shit out of her. Felicia Spencer, that's it. She was kicking the shit out of Felicia Spencer. But Felicia Spencer managed to connect with one elbow, which cut her, and maybe she looked a little bit tired. But the whole time, all the commentators were talking about was how tough Felicia Spencer was. Meanwhile, you know, you've got one of the best women's combat athletes in history doing what she does, and nobody's even mentioning it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do feel like she had a legitimate grievance. It's just the way it was handled was not great.
Yeah, the shit Dana White said about it too in the past is so bad.
yeah, it's not fair. You know, when I was listening to Brendan Shaw talk about it, and he started talking about how Cyborg's daughter was being bullied at school because of some of the stuff that was being said about her, made me feel for her, because that's not cool.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, so that's horrible. Really shame. Anyway, we've got a little bit off topic here.
Yeah, back onto Irene and Vanessa Mello's fight. Vanessa, she wasn't cutting the cage off. Like, I think Michael Bisping mentioned it or something. Obviously, Irene had stepped to the left and Vanessa would just walk forwards, just following her wake. Like, she wouldn't mirror her movements.
To show, like, the difference experience on the feet, yeah, as well. Like, Irene Aldana, she's, you know, she's Mexican through and through. She's been boxing for a long time. And that kind of, those footwork patterns, you know, are the thing that take the longest to build up. I mean, if you just look at you and me, when we're going around. Like, I'm so much less experienced, and so I like to put up a high guard and walk forward and try and make you tired. But at the time, you're the one creating angles and things like that. But if I try and match you like footwork for footwork and counter for counter and speed for speed, I'm going to come off even worse than I would if I just press it forward. You know, so it's difficult. But I did see some stuff from Mello that I liked. You know, she looked tough. She has got some hands. She's obviously strong. I just think she's undersized for that 135-pound division. So I do think she's worth keeping around. Maybe we see her down at 125 pounds and see what she can do.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's one more fight left on this card. Martin Bravo, Steven Peterson. Fucking all I can say is, like, mirrored spinning backfists.
Well, I think Martin Bravo was going for a spinning back elbow, I think. Right, so his hand wasn't really wasn't really extended, his arm. I think he was going for a spinning back elbow. But Steven Peterson's arm, as he was also going for a spinning back fist, the arm that he wasn't attacking with kind of blocked it. And then he managed to land it. Yeah, man, that KO got me hyped. Like, it was the first fight I watched and it got me hyped. And the crowd booed it.
Start the main card, yeah.
Yeah, the crowd booed it as well. They booed the spinning back fist. They booed that KO.
I don't care if it's your hometown guy getting knocked out. You got to give some respect to that finish.
Man, it was so good. I loved it.
I've got it on my screen right now. I'm trying to find like the exact replay of it so I can see how it happened. Oh, well, no, I went too far. Okay, yeah, watching it now.
Yeah, see if it looks like a spinning back elbow.
I think Peterson was losing the rounds up until
point. Definitely. And Martin Bravo
Bravo looked really slick on the feet, and he was putting a high pace on Steven
Peterson. Man, he was putting pressure on Steven Peterson, not letting him breathe at all.
Yeah, I'm kind of... it doesn't make for very good podcasting, but I'm rewatching this. It's a great round, man. Like, Steven Peterson is hanging tough and he's making it a fight, but in reality Martin Bravo is really touching him up with his hands and then mixing it up with those body kicks really well too. I think this could have been a long night for Steven Peterson had he not found that finish when he did.
Yeah, definitely. It was awesome. I couldn't believe the crowd booed it, and the crowd also booed Steven Peterson's introduction too, which is
The Mexicans and the Brazilians are not the kindest crowds to visiting foreign fighters. I think we've worked that one out.
It's bad as well because Martin Bravo was an awesome fighter. I loved watching him fight. But the thing is, when a crowd is booing somebody else for no reason at all, I have to back that person. So throughout the fight, I was backing Steven Peterson. Even though Martin Bravo impressed me, I was still backing Steven Peterson. So it just hurts their own fighter because I didn't want Martin Bravo to win. Even though he's a brilliant guy, brilliant fighter, I just wanted Steven Peterson to win just because he was being booed by the crowd.
Yeah, fair enough. I get that sentiment. I think it's the British in us that just wants to...
Back in the underdog. Yeah.
That's it. I just rewatched that finish. So yeah, that's exactly right. Is Martin Bravo went for a spinning back elbow. Peterson went for a spinning back fist at exactly the same time, and Peterson got the range right. Bravo didn't, and boom, clean on the chin. Just about as clean of a knockout as you're ever going to see. I reckon that's probably the best spinning back fist knockout that we've seen in the UFC.
It was awesome. Just because he was losing as well. It was just such a shock to see. But it's doing spinning shit is dangerous, man. It's a high risk, high reward kind of thing. Like when I trained Muay Thai at my gym in Sheffield, England, Wicker Camp, the guy who owned the gym, Mick Mullaney, he never taught us spinning stuff. It was just traditional, you know, straight on stuff. It was just like, never do spinning stuff because it's just so risky. You know, if you don't land it.
It can work. It can work. I mean, the one I've seen it used most effectively is like to counter leg kicks. So somebody who I see doing it a lot is Paul Felder. Like somebody will throw a leg kick to his lead leg and he'll immediately spin, like either with a turning side kick to the body or with a spinning back fist. And it can be effective, but you're right. Like it's dangerous for various reasons. Like you're exposing your back for a body lock and a takedown.
And if
you're exposing yourself to the counter,
Yeah, if a punch comes in, your face is turning into that punch because your face is turning, your jaw's turning straight into the punch that's coming at you. It's very risky.
If you're fully extended on that back fist too, and you connect with the forearm on the forehead, I mean, we saw what happens with Paul Felder against Mike Perry. You're going to break your arm. So it's risky from that extent too. Obviously, that's a less high percentage issue. But, you know, for my money, that's the best spinning back fist finish we've seen since Shoni Carter finished Matt Serra back at UFC 31 in May 2001. So, yeah, great finish, man. Really exciting way to start the first card. And I feel really good for Stephen Peterson, like, going out there. Like, obviously, he's not the kind of fighter in the place on the roster that gets to spend $30,000 on a training camp, but he will have trained his balls off for that fight. And then to travel all the way to Mexico City, hostile crowd, was losing that round, and then, boom, gets the most exciting finish of the night.
Yeah, it was amazing. And he had a really bad weight cut as well. I heard the commentary say he had to have an enema or something to make weight. So we don't even know if he was just gassing out. You know, that's why he was being beaten to the punch, because he was gassing out so early because he had such a bad weight cut. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible. It could have been also, you know, I don't know how long he got to spend in Mexico, but if you're lower down on the roster, you know, these guys aren't getting paid a ton of money, and it's a real sacrifice. You know, Jeremy Stevens, you know, he doesn't make a fortune, but he makes decent bank from the UFC, and he's got a lot of bonuses, so he can afford to get out there a couple of weeks early and kind of transport his camp. Somebody like Stephen Peterson can't afford to do that, so he may have only been there for 3 or 4 days. And you know, if you're listening to this and you've never tried to do any training at altitude, you know, it fucking sucks. Like, it's not, this is not people exaggerating. It makes a huge difference. You know, there's a reason why people put their training camps at altitude and stuff. So it's very possible that was affecting him. All the more reason, you know, why he's going to be fucking delighted that the fight finished the way it did.
Yeah, definitely. Cain Velasquez knows that. Was it in Mexico City when he gassed out again?
It was his first, like, UFC fight in Mexico against Fabricio Verdum. He was kind of back off that back injury. And you know, it was just crazy because Verdum, like, owned him in all areas there. Because not only did Cain gas out and he submitted him, and Cain was known for his cardio and all that stuff, and Cain was Mexican, but Verdum, like, spoke way better Spanish than Cain Velasquez too. So he was like, he should have been the hometown favorite rather than Cain in that one.
There was a video backstage of Cain Velasquez hooking Rodriguez, like, you know, to calm him down a little bit and be like, oh, I'm sorry the fight ended that way. And one of the comments was, I bet Cain Velasquez was gassed after hugging Rodriguez 3 times. Like, 2, 3 times.
Especially now he's not fucking training every day with DC. He's just training acrobatics for his pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you see Jorge Masvidal's get up in the crowd too?
Oh, yeah, with the Mexican kind of bullet
the sombrero
sling thing. Yeah. Man, I can't wait for his fight.
Yeah, it's coming up soon, man. The BMF belt. I can't believe they've made an actual belt for that too.
Yeah, that's great. Has there never been a BMF belt before? I've not done research into this.
No. This is just like it's just a silly thing that they've made for the fight. Like, a lot of people are mad about it, you know, saying how stupid. Yeah, it's stupid, but it's no more stupid. And I'm sorry for people who've been listening to this show that I'm saying this again, but yes, the BMF belt is stupider for me than interim titles. Interim titles are stupid. The BMF belt is stupid. At least this is fun, and like, we're gonna see The Rock come into the cage and give somebody a belt. It's all just a bit amusing.
What happens in the future though? If somebody wants to fight for that BMF title, and they're just told, "Yo, you're not bad enough for that."
For starters, like, I think you should just give that belt to Justin Gaethje and never take it off him, because he's never gonna lose. whether Justin Gaethje wins or loses a fight, he is always the baddest motherfucker in that division for me. But yeah, apparently Dana White says it's like a one and done thing. Whoever wins the belt wins the belt. It's not going to be defended. We're going to end up like in 5 years' time with all these new. It's going to be like the linear BMF champion or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I was going to like go over a bunch of like fights to make from Sherdog, but of course my laptop has just completely run out of battery. So I'm going to try and do this on my phone. So I apologize to anybody listening to this if you hear a bunch of clicking, but whatever, go fuck yourself. Okay. Here we go. Matt, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Matches to make after UFC Fight Night 159. Let's see. Carla Esparza versus Marina Rodriguez. I don't have a fucking clue who Marina Rodriguez is, so I'm not going to touch that. Irene Aldana versus Lena Landsberg. I think that would be good. Lena Landsberg is a bit of a step up in competition, but I massively favor Irene Aldana. But to be honest, again, like I don't know that much against Lena Landsberg. Steven Peterson versus Carl Bochniak. I love that fight. Carl Bogniak was the guy who had that amazing fight with Zabit Magomed Sharipov. Had that fight of the night, which was absolutely incredible. Two guys, quite similar guys, not like the most highly skilled, not slick guys, but just super tough and always going to come.
Yeah, they just weather the storm. Yeah.
I was hiding in an Airbnb in Laos when I watched that fight with Zabit. That was an amazing fight, man. I was on a visa run in Vientiane. What a shithole of a city that is. I was just kind of
Yeah,
it's a horrible place. But it looks like you're not even going to be able to do visa runs to Vientiane anymore the way Thai immigration is going.
Oh yeah, I've heard of people being turned away.
Yeah, gone are the days of just getting on a bus and hopping over the border and coming back. But Thailand is changing slowly but surely.
Last time I went to Vientiane, though, they had been learning Thai for a year, and obviously I was busy training, so I didn't really go to the classes. But the Thai immigration official started talking to me in Thai, and I was like, "Oh, nit noi crap!" And he would look so pissed off, and I thought they were going to turn me away, but they didn't. So happy.
So it's not usually so for anybody who doesn't know, like if you, it's not really like this anymore. It's kind of changed in the last couple of years. But one of the ways to be able to stay in Thailand relatively long term was to get an education visa, and if you didn't actually like have time or want to attend the classes, like a lot of people over there, like I was coaching jiu-jitsu and training, and Lewis is a Muay Thai guy, so a lot of people are out there to train. They don't actually have time to go to the classes, so there would be schools that would offer you these education visas and sign off your classes so that you could keep renewing your visa. And some schools were really strict about it, so you'd have to find one of those schools that would let it go. But now, man, they're cracking down on that stuff. But even back then, they would let you do like 2 years of an education visa and kind of turn a blind eye. But I knew some people who went for their third education visa year in a row. So by all accounts, at this point, they had been studying Thai full time for 2 years, and they would come back across the border and the border guard would ask them something super simple, like, what is your name in Thai? And they would just look at them and be like, fucking, you've been studying this for 2 years? Yeah, fuck off. Get out of the country. Now it seems like they're cracking down on that stuff anyway, man. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Shannon and I, we had to up sticks and get out of the country in 30 days. That's why we're in Georgia now. So if you were planning on like going to Thailand and doing your visa runs and staying there for a bit, just be aware it's not quite as simple as it used to be.
Or actually just go to the classes. That'd be fine.
Yeah, but then you actually have to play by the rules. That's no fun.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a look, see if there's anything else interesting come out of this. By the numbers, UFC Fight Night 159. Let's see what they have to say about this. Four takedowns landed in 11 attempts by Carla Esparza. She's now landed 33 total takedowns in her UFC career. Isn't that fascinating? So 12 of the 13 unofficial media scorecards scored the Brandon Moreno Askar Askarov fight in favor of Brandon Moreno.
Oh.
So, I mean,
yeah, I think it should have gone that way.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I thought that was a closer fight than would have been for that. But yeah, fair enough. I, like I said, I would have liked to have seen it go to Moreno. I don't have a problem with the draw. But yeah, it's interesting that 12 out of 13 unofficial cards went that way. Seven spinning back fist knockouts in UFC history. So Martin
Peterson.
Yeah, seven in history. So it's that one by Steven Peterson, then Shoni Carter against Matt Serra, and then John McDessie, Paul Felder, Douglas Silva, Alexander Rajcik, and Johnny Walker all have spinning back fist KOs or TKOs. There's a bit of trivia for you. This goes to show how the fight was going. So in that first round, Bravo was outlanding Steven Peterson by 37 significant strikes before he got knocked the fuck out by that spinning back. Gutters.
Well, a stupid thing, just because he tried to spin. If he'd not tried to spin, it would have been fine.
It's one of those things, like, it's high risk, high reward. Either you end up with a spectacular finish yourself, or you end up, like, how many times have we seen that? Like, Chris Weidman against Luke Rockhold, man, that started the end of that fight too.
There was that one who is it, American Top Team, the guy who owns it?
Dan Lambert.
Who's Cody Garbrandt's coach, like the fighter?
Oh, you're talking about Team Alpha Male, Uriah Faber?
Oh, Team Alpha Male, yeah, that's it. Uriah Faber, he tried one and got hit and got taken down because of it.
What fight was it?
It wasn't in the UFC. It was in the WEC, I think.
Oh, I think that must have been the Mike Brown fights then.
Early days. Yeah, probably. But, like, if you're winning a fight and you know you can take the guy on the feet, it's just, I don't see there's any reason to do anything that's spinning. To give up, like, you know what I mean? Anything that high risk, there's no need to do it if you know that you're the better fighter on the feet.
Yeah, fair enough.
Especially something as close as a spinning back elbow, too. That's close. If you're doing a spinning back kick, you're still pretty far away. If you're doing a spinning back elbow, you're looking for trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're just trying to pull stuff out of your ass at that point. I'm trying to look to see who got the, like, performance bonuses for Fight of the Night and stuff. But I can't seem to find them. I thought I saw them on the front page of Sherdog, but I guess not. That's pretty much the card. Do you have anything else burning that you want to talk about before we shut this up?
No, I don't have anything else.
I appreciate you coming on, because you saved me from just spouting shit into a microphone by myself for 40 minutes.
It's been a lot less stressful than I thought, but I hate my own voice, so I'll give you my thoughts on it tomorrow when I listen back to it.
You don't have to listen back to it. I listened to maybe 30% of them just to check that I haven't been a complete dickhead.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen back to it all, just a little bit, just to see how I feel. But yeah, it's been a lot less stressful than I thought.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's quite fun. Like, as long as you have somebody else to talk with, it's cool.
So it's fine. With somebody else and a bit of alcohol.
Do you want to come back next week?
Yeah, of course.
All right, cool. So we'll do another one on, like, Tuesday or Wednesday. By then, I will have watched the prelims, so we can have a chat about those and whatever's going on. But the UFC is on a crazy run at the moment. I think there's, like, an event every weekend for 12 weeks. So
yeah, and the competition's getting so good now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just everybody's so skilled.
When I first started watching MMA, there were like four or five events a year, and you had months and months of build up to each one. And I'd buy like Fighters Only magazine and geek out about what was going to happen. And fucking, it was just so much fun. You know, all the events were so big, and you had so much time to get excited. Everyone was on steroids, so fights didn't really fall apart as much as they do anymore. There was no USADA. And I used to know everybody in every division, you know, in Pride and the UFC, and now, man, fucking hell, there are just so many events. Like, I can barely keep track of like the top eight in each division, like barely top five in some of them to know what's going on, because, you know, there are only so many hours, man. Like, I'm trying to train and do a bit of work and like watch rugby and watch MMA and like drink. It's impossible to do a podcast, you know, do a bit of research for that. There's not enough time to watch like all the prelims and then the main cards, and then you add on top of that, you know, there's all the Bellator fights and the PFL fights. Now they've got this $1 million tournament, and then ONE FC. And then if you like, I like to watch grappling too. So I've got all the Polaris. You've got ADCC coming up. Like there is just so much. And I kind of wish they'd back off a little bit just to make it a bit easier to understand what the hell's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, ONE FC's getting big now. They're trying to break out in America too, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't see that happening. You got Bellator and the UFC to contend with. And, you know, I just think, like, the UFC mainly props itself up with casual fans. It's not people like me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Who are making them their money. It's the guys who buy the fight kits and the T-shirts and you know, buy every pay-per-view and stuff like that. And so I think ONE FC is going to have a lot of trouble breaking into that market, because I think that the brand is still bigger than the fighters. So people, if it's not like those three letters UFC, then people don't associate it with MMA. You know, it's not MMA to them; it's UFC. Like, do you train UFC, bro? It's those guys.
Yeah. I do UFC. They ONE FC really needed Ben Askren to just go on a massive fucking win streak, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been good. Man, we've got fucking Ben Askren versus Damian Maia coming up soon. Like, as a jiu-jitsu guy, I am so excited. I am just creaming my pants in anticipation for that. Can't wait to get stuck into geeking out and breaking that down, too. That's going to be, like, a fun podcast for me.
Yeah, that will be.
All right, man. We'll leave it there. Thanks very much for coming on again. And we'll chat soon and sort out a podcast for next week.
All right, man. Just let me know.
All right, cool. Thanks, buddy.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Like I said, the sound levels are a little bit off. We can definitely do better, and I'll make sure to sort that out for next week when we do another podcast together, so the levels are a little bit more even and your eardrums aren't being blown out when you try to turn the podcast up. Other than that, as always, follow the podcast on Twitter at the GT, not Twitter, I'm not on Twitter, I hate Twitter, Instagram. Follow the podcast on Instagram at the GTG podcast. Follow me at Harder to Kill BJJ. Follow Shan, who's not here, but we'll be back soon, at Foxface_world. And you can follow Lewis on Instagram at that Lazenby guy. Like George Lazenby of James Bond fame. That Lazenby guy. We are brought to you, as always, by Desktop Dojo. Go to desktopdojo.com if you have some kind of training facility and you need a good website to present to the public. And that's it. I'll be back probably with Lewis again at the beginning of next week to talk about some current events, some upcoming fights, and other fascinating stuff, I'm sure. That's it from me.